Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
The Deputy Secretary of Defense, William Lynn.
The degree of partisanship in Congress now, it has made it very difficult to get a deficit reduction deal that we think is going to hold. We have a deal on the discretionary spending, but we've left it to this super committee to get a deal on mandatory programs and revenues. And the fear is that they'll fail and we'll face a sequester, which will more than double the cuts to defense.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Chronic diseases account for 70% of deaths in the U.S. ICF International supports public health programs that improve health and quality of life. Learn how at ICFI.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio is John Booth, Director for Web and New Media Group at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
You know, before the show, we talked about your name, John Booth. We kind of make some silly jokes about John Wilkes Booth, but no relation to that character, are you?
Nope, none at all.
Okay. So if you're listening, you want to Google his information. It's B-O-O-T-H, John, J-O-N, John Booth from CMS. You know, my show handles all kinds of different topics, John. We do everything from mobile devices to SharePoint. We talk about software development methodologies. And I think this is a good topic today that maybe assemble a whole different range of IT topics to talk about. And we're going to talk about a website that you've helped work on. It's called MyMedicare.gov. It's MyMedicare, MyMedicare.gov. I think it brings together a lot of the problems that my listeners have. One problem is getting information to citizens. Another problem is, what about security? Another whole problem is project management. And another whole problem is how do we respond to initiatives that President Obama wants us to push through? I mean, there's a lot of my listeners who are getting pushed into doing things like moving to the cloud or setting up portals that they want to learn from your experience and maybe have some takeaways that they don't make some of the mistakes that you may or may not have made in this big project. Mm-hmm. But before we begin, I thought we'd maybe open up and maybe you could share with us your background and how you wound up working for CMS.
Sure. So I've been at CMS for just over 18 years now, actually. I started relatively soon out of college at what was then called HCFA.
No gray hair on you, buddy.
No.
That long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I actually came out of college. I was an English major and started as a writer-editor. And sort of fell into as the agency started to get on the web in the very early days.
You know, the last two chief technology officers I had in the air, both English majors.
Yep. Yeah, there's some sort of I've worked with a number of other people in IT that have, sort of humanities backgrounds. And so we started publishing. I was an editor on a journal at the time, and we started putting up a website about it and sort of self-taught HTML and picked that all up from there. So I was on the web team for about 10 years at CMS once the web became sort of formalized in the organization. Then I spent a couple of years in our IT organization, which is called OIS, the Office of Information Services. And then I spent some time in our Creative Services group, which is an area that does publications and at the time was doing new media as well. And then came back to the web probably a little over a year and a half ago at this point. So I've been back overseeing the agency's web program since then.
Well, John, I certainly have gray hair, and I have seen a lot of things. And what I've noticed over the years is that new media meant something in 2000, means something different today, and meant something different in 1985. So the new media, what is the new media, or what does new media mean for the CMS?
I think so it represents, in our organization right now, it represents a lot of the social media work that we're doing. So we've got people on our team that manage a presence on YouTube. We've got some pages on Facebook. We have some Twitter accounts, LinkedIn, those sorts of channels. And also just more and more integration of multimedia into our websites. We used to have very text-heavy websites, and now we're incorporating images and, you know, inline video on the web pages and that sort of thing. So from our perspective, it represents that line of work in our more traditional web program.
Certainly reflects what's going on in the commercial world. It's a big, massive trend towards non-text-based information, because that's the way humans like it. They like it to be visual and increasingly handheld. Well, let's maybe define the problem for our audience here, and every organization have different problems, and many agencies have a similar type of problem. And the problem is how do you make information available to citizens? Now, citizens writ large, it could be, veterans over in the Pentagon need to get information on the medical background, and regular citizens who qualify for government-sponsored programs may want to get information. So I guess that's defining the problem real generically, isn't it? You want to maybe roll from there and...
Sure. So we have, I think of our information channels sort of in three ways. One is information that we publish that's available to everybody. And we have lots of information on Medicare, both for the provider community and for beneficiaries and others. We have information on Medicaid, CHIP, and all the various other programs CMS oversees. So we have our public-facing websites for that purpose. On the Medicare.gov website, which is our public Medicare website, there are parts of that website where a beneficiary can go into our Medicare plan finder and from there opt to choose a Medicare plan for the first time or change the plan they're enrolled in. So from the public website, there are various parts of it where people can log in and perform personalized actions. And then we have MyMedicare.gov, and the idea there is that's for an individual's unique access to their own data that we CMS have about them. They can look at their recent claims history. They can look at their Medicare summary notice, which is the record of any visits to various healthcare providers and facilities. So we go from the generic and public information that everybody can see down to very individualized information that's accessible only by that particular person.
If you look at this from 40,000 feet, or actually from 10 years, what you see is this has been a project that's slowly been maturing and being more and more popular. In 2003, I think the Veterans Administration came up with My Health eVet, a program that had information that was released around 2006. Is that right? Is that when CMS started coming up with some of this personal health?
That's correct, yes.
So so we've got a couple programs that were kind of in the incipient stage, kind of as we say around my house, fixing to get ready to actually release a lot of information. And then around the time that Barack Obama was taking up residence in the White House, it seems to be, I mean, it's obvious he gave more push towards, the federal government releasing information to the citizens. And around 2010, is that when the big was, okay, John, let's crank this up, huh?
Yeah, so this project started in a couple of phases. It began as a relatively small pilot for a couple of states and expanded out. We took a big step a couple of years ago of beginning to automatically enroll everybody who ages into Medicare. They get an account set up for them in MyMedicare.gov. It's their choice whether they want to use it or not, but every one of those people that's become a Medicare beneficiary in the last 2 years has an account on the system, and then making more and more information available through that channel and really starting to make the push to drive active use of it by putting features there that people, really are sort of very valuable features for people.
And just for the benefit of some listeners who may be driving around in their car, what is the age group we're talking about, and when do you qualify for this? I have no idea.
So most people age into the Medicare program when they are 65. There are certain populations, people who have disability or have the ESRD or end-stage renal disease are in the Medicare program prior to 65. But for the most part, it's people 65 and up.
Great. The reason I have you in because you've won an award for this program, or your agency's won an award for this, and it's from ACT-IAC, which is a very, very popular group. I know the folks over there. And they describe it as a part of a BCC modernization initiative, and maybe you can share with us what that's all about. I'm not familiar with the BCC.
Sure. So the BCC stands for Beneficiary Contact Center. And so the important thing about MyMedicare.gov is for 1-800-MEDICARE, which has been available for a number of years now, people can call up and get very detailed information and ask questions, and it's all very personalized to their information. We built MyMedicare.gov on top of the same backend platform that that runs 1-800-MEDICARE. So the goal here is to have consistent messaging across channels. If you look up your claim status through MyMedicare.gov or if you call 1-800-MEDICARE, you're going to get the exact same information because it's the same back-end data source. And so the goal of modernizing the BCC program is to build online channels so that, yes, the phone line is there, but for people that want to access this information online, they can do that very easily through the web. They can do that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
So BCC stands for?
Beneficiary Contact Center.
Beneficiary Contact Center. Now, in my world, in the commercial world, contact centers are very, very expensive. To get a human being into an office, pay them the salary, the benefits, the vacation, worry about sick days, scheduling them 24/7, what about the weekends, what about a snowstorm? Very, very expensive. And from the perspective of the federal government, this is a very expensive proposition, this 1-800 number. It seems like it's cheap. It's expensive. Mm-hmm. And I think if you just think and look at Obama, he's saying, well, maybe we can save some money. Maybe we can reduce our expenses by automating some of this. But because let's face it, let's say if you're 65 or 70 or 75 years old, you may be more comfortable with dialing up the phone, but maybe your children want to dial in and find out more information about your. And so I'm thinking this really makes a whole lot of sense from a demographic perspective and a financial perspective.
Yeah, I would say for both. And so as we look at this year, sort of the very first set of baby boomers are starting to age into Medicare this year. And so over the last 10 years, we've seen the number of beneficiaries that are online and use the internet regularly. That number's gone up quite a bit. And so we think with boomers aging into Medicare, that number will increase significantly and that people will be interested in sort of this more self-service model. It's definitely a cheaper channel to do it through the web than it is through the phone. But again, both are available, and it's sort of a matter of personal preference which one people want to use.
And if we just look at demographics, recent studies show that for people under 30, 40% of them prefer text messaging over a regular telephone call. Mm-hmm. Now, if you get a person who's 65 or older, they might prefer an 800 number. But I think if you design a system only for an 800 line, in 10 years, that may be obsolete. I mean, so many people are so more comfortable in getting information. It could be on a Saturday afternoon, if you're visiting your parents and wanting information on the program, you can just fire up your computer and get it rather than, okay, let's wait till Monday morning, then I'll dial the 800, or whatever happens to be. It just seems to be more practical.
Yes. And so one of the things that we can do online is we can just be more agile and get information out more quickly. So the Medicare summary notices, which are the records of, again, a Medicare beneficiary's visits to a physician and that sort of thing, those get mailed out once a quarter, but they're online in MyMedicare.gov the second they come out. So, again, you can get information more quickly through the online channels than you can through traditional mail or through the phone.
Great. We're going to have to take a break when we come back, talk more about this project, maybe project management, when it was released, and talk about an agile method of responding to problems encountered during the process. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with John Booth, Director, Web and New Media Group at the CMS.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
my family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
Human Capital Management Federal is a highly anticipated training conference with over 300 delegates and key speakers, such as John Barry, Director of the Office of Personnel Management, John Sepulveda, Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Administration at the Department of Veterans Affairs, and Michael Caine, Chief Human Capital Officer for the Department of Energy. The event is November 14th through 16th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington, Virginia. Visit hcmfederal.com for more info and to register now. Mention code FNRHCMF to receive a 10% discount.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio you have John Booth, who's the director of Web and New Media Group at CMS. And we're talking about an award-winning website, and it's called MyMedicare.gov. The first part of the program, we talked in general about the big, huge objectives and increasing information for citizens. And I'd like to maybe delve into just the nitty-gritty. Okay, roll up your shirt sleeves and get muddy and talk about, okay, so you got a website that seems to be working, and so your boss comes up to you and says, hey, big guy, we got to change this all around. What's the process here in changing a website, especially with medical records, which are kind of sensitive?
Sure. So the My Medicare portal had been online for a couple of years and had seen pretty good growth from our perspective and pretty good usage. But we did think we could make it better. So what we actually did is tied a redesign of two related websites together. So we have the Medicare.gov website, which is the public-facing website, and we had the MyMedicare.gov website. And to date, they had sort of different look and feels. They didn't match up exactly. They didn't feel like they were sort of the same family. So I think we focused the redesign in sort of three areas for improvement. And the first was relatively easy, getting a very consistent look and feel between the two websites and making them feel like they're a family. And I think particularly as you get into health information, that sense of these sites feeling like they're from the same organization and their government websites was very, very critical from a trust perspective. The second area we made lots of improvements in were the login process and the ability, if somebody's forgotten their password, to get that reset. And prior to the redesign, generally people had to call 1-800-MEDICARE and get some help to do that. And again, in the self-service model of that, letting people just do that in real time was critical.
It's expensive. Every phone call is expensive. Very expensive.
Yes. So then the third was actually the content available once you got logged in and how it was organized. And this is where I think we probably made the most improvements. So everything that was in the site was sort of laid out on a map. We mapped the structure of the current website. and then took a look at that and put the information into much more intuitive categories, added some information that hadn't then before, linked out to resources on Medicare.gov, like publications and that sort of thing. So just looking to really improve the user experience. And we did run that past we had a group of a couple of Medicare beneficiaries that we could go to and have people look at mock-ups and wireframes and say, you know, would this make sense for you? Where would you find this information? And we found that people were much more quickly able to find the information they were looking for in the new design. So that, I think, is one of the things we're most proud of and what drove a lot the award that we received for the website.
So I think no matter what agency you're working for, whether it's commerce, whether it's labor, I mean, if you're tasked with coming up with a website, I mean, these 3 points aren't bad starting points. You know, if you work for labor and you have to come up with a new website, I mean, maybe you should be consistent with the major website. That's probably not a good plan. Maybe reducing the complexity of logging in, that might save money. And thirdly, content. I mean, you know, and I like the idea of having consistent information over a wide platform, which is, again, it's easy to talk about and snap your finger and say, well, look, that blue there is different from that blue. You know, Google tested 47 shades of blue on their splash page before they decided which shade to come up with. So this is not easy. So you're charged with this project. And then I guess the first decision is, do we do it in-house? Do we take it outside? What was your thought process there?
So this project actually involved a number of contractors. We had sort of the project management functions and the context expertise was in-house. But there are a number of contractors that support the BCC platform and a piece of software that runs behind that called NGD, or the Next Generation Desktop. And then we have web development contractors. So we had a couple of contractors, specifically it was CGI, Federal, and NGS did a lot of the development work there.
And you were what we call a project manager and juggling all this.
That's correct. Yes, well, that was our team.
What a wonderful position to be in. So, you know, in any kind of an organization, there's always scarce resources, and there are people pushing and pulling in different projects, and imagine your arms getting tugged one way or the other. Did this impact other projects that were going on at the same time?
Yes, I think it did. So I think in 2010, much of our team's resources were focused on that Medicare.gov and MyMedicare.gov redesign, and that was a deliberate decision to sort of focus resources there and improve that channel. And so as that's done, we've certainly looked at user feedback on both the Medicare.gov and MyMedicare.gov websites, and we've been tweaking them since they launched. But now we sort of turned our attention to other things, like our main agency website, which is CMS.gov, and we're investing lots of resources in making that better now. So, yeah, it did take a good chunk of resources, and it was a sort of a deliberate decision to focus there for about a year.
And that's always awkward when you work in a large organization and let's just call it Group B, kind of feels like they're on the back burner. Oh, hey, how about me? John, give me some of your attention. Give me some of your money. We need this stuff. Look, we're dealing with medical problems. People are living and dying basically on my, and you're saying, no, we have to do this. And then another person may say, well, how about us? I mean, this is a tough push and pull. And I think the leadership here, either they got their arms twisted or they thought it was a good efficient use of their money to focus in on this. And it seems like it's been a success.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, again, as we look at the continued growth of the Medicare population over the next couple of years, and the fact that we believe, you know, they will have a hunger for online services, I do think it was a wise investment. But yeah, it's a balancing act always.
Tell me about Blue Button. What is Blue Button?
Blue Button is a cross-government initiative that we at CMS and at HHS participate very heavily in, and the VA as well, and it's sort of growing beyond its origins there. The idea behind Blue Button is to take people's health information that we have in our systems, in the Medicare systems, in the VA systems, and make it available for people who want that information. Again, this gets back to sort of lots of drivers in the Obama administration about open data, allowing people access to the information that we have about them, increasing our transparency. So what the Blue Button takes the form of is through MyMedicare.gov, beneficiaries can log in and they can download the health information that we have about them, that claims data, into a local file on their computer, and then they can hold on to that information if they like. If they're using a PHR, they can import it into various PHR systems, and there's a lot of backing in the industry for this format as a standard. So that's, I think, been a big success.
You're stealing my thunder. I was going to bring up personal health record, PHR, electronic health record. That's a 22-hour discussion, but we just touched on it real quickly. Let me jump back from a nuts and bolts. This is what one of my listeners are thinking. They're scratching their head going, okay, we got John Booth. He's trying to put together this big website. He's getting pushed and pulled. He's working 16-hour days, all kinds of headaches, trouble, unexpected things. Well, how do you forecast how many people are going to use it? Do you have a Ouija board? How do you forecast how many people are going to use this? And how do you judge, how do you evaluate whether it's, if you judge it to have 200,000 people and 400,000 use it? I mean, how do you, the scalability must be a challenge.
Yeah, so the scalability of MyMedicare.gov overall is a challenge, and I think it was sort of an open question to us whether Blue Button would have, you know, would it impact the performance of the site? What would the uptake be? That sort of thing. We've seen, I know it's I think significantly north of 50,000 or so users of the Blue Button at this point. And I think it was really a question to us of how many people were going to use this. So that's a number that we've been, I think, very pleased with and happy to see. That number. I think if you look at VA, they've actually had even more success with the Blue Button. I think they've got more users in their online platform. But again, I think it's been a success from our perspective, and it's met or exceeded our expectations.
Well, the success is a relative term. The classic story is in September of 2000. I was writing for the Washington Post, and we had an event that took place on the 11th of September, and bang, their website got killed. I mean, they couldn't have predicted that. I mean, I think this is a challenge for all people who are project managers who have websites that they're trying to design. I mean, you have to try to at least try to forecast, okay, who is your probable target audience? So you can probably define that as the number of people eligible for Medicare. Okay, in the next 5 years, is that going to go up or down? You can probably project that out. And I think that's the start, but that's really just so rough. I mean, and how do you get your Google, your analytics to scale to that? That's a challenge in itself.
Yeah. So what we see in the MyMedicare.gov website is pretty routine use. And so throughout the year, the usage patterns are relatively consistent, and there are absolutely power users. There are people that go into that website once a week or even more frequently than that to look at their information. For the Medicare.gov website, each year, and in this year, actually, the dates are changing. So from October 15th through December 7th, we have open enrollment, and beneficiaries can change the plans that they're enrolled in. So we put that data live on October 1st, and our traffic really, really goes extremely high at that time of the year.
Let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about the hot button subject, not a blue button, but the hot button subject of electronic health records, personal health records, and how that all fits with the CMS. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have John Booth, who's the director for Web and New Media Group at the CMS.
More than 45,000 men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces have been wounded in action overseas. They need our help as they return to the homes they so bravely protected. Please join the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 15th, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, providing much-needed direct programs for injured and returning veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Charity 5K.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Three things to know about the proposed merger of AT&T and T-Mobile. With the planned merger, AT&T will invest $8 billion more and deploy the next generation of wireless internet to nearly everyone in America. This investment will create as many as 96,000 American jobs. We're not investing to create jobs, but jobs will be created because we're investing. AT&T.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. March for Babies! Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Retirement is expensive. Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. Join me for an informative dinner seminar on October the 18th at Mrs. K's Toll House Restaurant in Silver Spring. We'll talk about ways to help you disaster-proof your retirement. Call 1-800-783-1564 to make a reservation. Seating is limited, so call now. 1-800-783-1564. And join me on Saturday mornings at 10:30 for how to protect and grow your money on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
The 12th Annual Excellence in Partnership Awards is October 26th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. The Excellence in Partnership Awards honor those who have excelled at promoting partnership in government procurement. A special tribute to Mythbusters for those who embody effective communication between government and industry. Come celebrate at this special event for the government contracting community and the Multiple Award Schedules program. Register now for the Excellence in Partnership Awards at eipawards.com.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
Vision Airlines is starting nonstop service from BWI Airport to Grand Bahama Island. So they're offering $29 fares each way and specially priced three-night packages at any of 10 resorts on the island. The kicker here is you need to book by November 2nd and travel between November 3rd and December 19th. So that does fit in with that before the holidays parameter. You can check all this out at visionairlines.com.
I always like to check out the boat shows and dream a little bit. What can you tell me about that?
Well, you're in luck. The big powerboat show is on in Annapolis this weekend. You can check out the details on page 49 of the October Recreation News or, of course, at recreationnews.com. But this is one of the truly great powerboat shows around the country, so it's, if you're into that, it's time to go down there.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have John Booth, who's the director for the Web and New Media Group at the CMS, and we're talking about some of the challenges he had to overcome in coming up with a new website called MyMedicare.gov. He must have gotten lucky or smart or something because he's won awards for it. So I want to talk about the challenges in changing websites. And before the break, John, you brought up kind of a hot topic here called PHR, Personal Health Record, and EHR. Perhaps you can define that for our audience so we can start talking about how they're made available and what stage of transparency they're in right now.
Sure. So from our perspective, a personal health record is something that an individual controls, and they can put their medical information into it, and it's something that remains under their control. And EHR is more of a health system that a provider would use to track information about services that they provide and that sort of thing. There's been some discussion over the years of is the My Medicare website a PHR, and it really isn't. It's a site to let you access the information that Medicare has about you. And we do, through that website, allow people to input some of their own information about medical conditions that they might have, allergies, things that they want their doctor to be aware of. And we let people take that information. There's something called the on-the-go report that they can print out from Medicare.gov and take with them to a physician visit.
Well, that's convenient, huh?
Yes, it is. And that's something that's one of, I think, the most widely used features in the website. We see lots of use of that. The idea behind the Blue Button Initiative, though, was to let people take this information that we have about them and put that into actual PHR systems that they might use, whether that's something they would get through their plan or their healthcare provider, or whether it's something they would use like Microsoft Health Vault that they've set up an account in. And so we we, meaning sort of everybody in the federal government who was working on the Blue Button Initiative, did work with the various PHR vendors and got their buy-in that they would support the Blue Button format as an import. So you can take your Blue Button data that you get from MyMedicare.gov, you can take your Blue Button data that you get from the VA, and you can import that into any of these systems. And that's becoming more standardized over time. So I think there's more of a connection from a MyMedicare.gov and a Blue Button perspective that really relates to PHRs as opposed to EHRs. Again, the EHRs are the systems that are generating the data that actually comes to CMS in the forms of claims and those sorts of things, and ultimately makes its way into MyMedicare.gov, but it's sort of through the back end rather than through the front end.
I don't know if there's a differentiation without a distinction here, but so a patient portal, what exactly would be a patient portal then?
So the patient portal, I think MyMedicare.gov does, it may not be a PHR, but I think it is a patient portal because it lets people, in addition to being able to sort of see your claims history and those sorts of things, you can, through MyMedicare.gov, put in a list of the physicians that you see, the plan that you are in, and so on and so forth. So it really can be a picture of your participation in the Medicare program.
Okay, so let's say John Gilroy has a medical record, and I have fungus on my toe, and I'm kind of sensitive about that, and I don't want people to know I have toe fungus. And so, you know, maybe people have health records that they want to keep private, and this is a big concern with dealing with anyone's health records, whether it's toe fungus, whether it's a missing ear from a bar fight. I mean, so what about security? And this kind of takes this basic information, and it multiplies the complexity by about fivefold, doesn't it?
It does. And so we do take the security on all our websites seriously, but particularly around MyMedicare.gov because it does house that sensitive information. That website actually lives with the rest of the infrastructure I described earlier for the Beneficiary Contact Center. And again, it has all the protections around that environment and the beneficiary data there. And we go through security audits on that website and so on and so forth to make sure we protect that data. And so the only access to that data, again, is either by the beneficiary themselves or by the beneficiary contacting 1-800-MEDICARE and authorizing the access to those records. So it is definitely well-protected data.
To back up to earlier in the show, and that was one of the objectives here, making sure the login process was secure. And mm-hmm. This just isn't logging in to place an order for pizza during the suit. This is log information for sensitive medical information that by law has to be protected.
Yes. Yeah, HIPAA and various other protections are around this data, so yes.
You tossed out this company, Microsoft. Never heard of it. Microsoft has a health vault, but another little company that no one's ever heard of called Google, it has Google Health. Similar type products, different? What's the difference there?
I think they're pretty similar, and I think Google, I'm not sure that they're investing that much in Google Health anymore, but there are a number of other vendors as well. And again, I think from our perspective, the goal of everybody involved in Blue Button is to document that format and to share that with the industry so that any and all can support that format as other, you know, I'm sure other PHR vendors will be coming along over time and the industry will shift. And our goal is that we have an open standard for this data that anybody is able to implement with no conditions on it. So again, just, you know, looking to support an open marketplace as much as possible.
So you were in the stages of putting together this website, and you had to sit together with your team and lock the door and say, no one's going to leave here until we come up with a prediction of how much volume we're going to have in the first week. We have to have some idea. You mm-hmm. can't weasel out and go, well, I really don't know. Well, that ain't good enough. And so, yeah. So in those planning stages, how did you guess? How did you estimate it?
We look a lot at the historical traffic data for the websites. As I was mentioning earlier, in the case of Medicare.gov, that environment sees 4 to 5 times the normal traffic for the last quarter of the year when open enrollment's in. So in general, we build our environments to handle the maximum amount of capacity. And I think we, you know, probably relative to many other federal web teams, have a really big footprint in terms of the number of servers we have.
It's an educated guess, but it's still just a guess.
You know? It is, absolutely, yeah. Yes.
And do you have built in, you sit together with your team and lock the door and say, okay, let's guess what we're going to get in the first couple weeks. What about 3 or 4 years from now and scaling this? This has to be part of your process. I mean, it's going to scale, and how much is it going to scale, and how much is it going to cost for that scale?
Yeah, it is. And when we look at our web stats just over the past 4 or 5 years, the curve, the traffic almost looks exponential. It's growing so much, and it's going to, with more and more people aging into Medicare, it's going to get higher. We are, along with the rest of the federal government, I think, in the very early stages of looking a lot at like cloud computing environments and areas where we can get much more scale, more effectively, quicker, ideally less, in a more cost-effective way than we're able to do today.
And let's be honest here, old geezers like me may want to print out something before they go to the physician. Youngsters like you may want to have a handheld device sitting in their doctor's office and pull it up right then and there.
Yep.
And why should you carry on a piece of paper, kill a tree, when you can have it right there? It's a generational thing. But it's kind of timely. I mean, you can check your status rather than reading a sports magazine in your doctor's office, you can check your status and say, well, doc, did you know that I'm allergic to XYZ? And he may or may not, she may or may not know that. So it's very convenient.
Yep. Yeah, so mobile is another area we're doing a lot of research in and investigation and looking at how we embrace that.
Is that
read
part
something.
Of the design?
The current design, I would say no, but I think as we look at future designs, as we look at anything that we might be changing over the next year or so, I think that'll be a key part of it.
We're going to take a break when we come back. We're going to talk about this organization called the Markle Foundation, and maybe talk about some of the impetus for this change, and more about electronic medical records and some of the predictions for the future of this website and how you can budget for changes in the future, which we know there are going to be lots of changes. We just don't know when or how. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with John Booth, Director Web and New Media Group at the CMS.
Here's Mike Malazzo, Deputy CIO for Operations of HUD, on the Storage Efficiency Panel, sponsored by NetApp.
We are seeing a surge in new applications, new data requirements, along with looking at best practices. Deduplication is certainly a place where we want to look. We also need to look at getting our arms around the data to consolidate where we can. There's a lot of redundant data. This gentleman spoke about litigation holds. That's never ending, and we're keeping data for a long period of time on that.
To hear more, visit federalnewsradio.com, keyword storage.
If you're in federal IT, there's one area where you really want to do more with less. That's storage. And how do you keep storage from eating up your budget? That's simple. Buy less of it. NetApp storage is flexible and easy to manage. It also requires far less hardware, at least 50% less for virtualized environments. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency built on NetApp and delivered by NetApp partners like WWT. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal.
Profile America, Tuesday, October 11th. This is National School Lunch Week, a name which probably conjures up visions of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But it's time to note the wholesome lunches being served every day at lunch to children across the nation and to thank the many patient people who prepare and serve them. There is a recognized link between having a good meal and the ability of a child to learn. This led to the National School Lunch Act in 1946. There are now 55.5 million children in schools from kindergarten through high school. Of these, more than 31 million receive either free or reduced cost lunches because of their family income. More than 11 million of these children also eat breakfast at school. You can find more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
ITT Defense is becoming ITT Excellus, a new name in aerospace and defense. ITT Excellus will begin as a diversified top-tier global technology leader with the same strengths it has had for more than 50 years. Ingenuity, agility, and the ability to deliver exceptional, rapidly fielding, and affordable solutions that solve complex customer challenges across all platforms. Learn more about the future ITT Excellus at AUSA 2011 or by visiting defense.itt.com/AUSA2011.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few. The proud. The Marines.
Caps fans, hockey season is in full swing.
Doesn't get better than that.
The Caps are hard at work. Can you feel the excitement building? You've been doing your part in building America's hockey capital by extending our consecutive game sellout streak at Verizon Center. Tickets are still available for remaining games, but are extremely limited. So call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Join senior government leaders from CMS, NIH, HHS, VA, and MHS at AFSEA Bethesda's 4th Health IT Day, November 2nd at the Mayflower Renaissance Hotel in D.C. Discussions will include managing security for a mobile point of care, joint electronic health records, federal health regulations and procurements, and big data management. AFSEA Bethesda thanks premier sponsors Accenture, Booz Allen Hamilton, Intel, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Northrop Grumman, SAS, and Vangent. Register at AFSEABethesda.org/HealthITDay.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we have John Booth in the studio. He's the director of the Web and New Media Group at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS. And we're talking about a very successful site, and the site's called MyMedicare.gov. And we talked about, well, geez, how's this project get managed? What are the challenges? What about security? But before we go any further, we have listeners who knew that you're an English major, and they're scratching their head going, is he a real card-carrying nerd or not? So I have to give my top 10 questions to find out exactly where you stand on the nerd cool guy scale. I, of course, am a cool guy. So let's talk about the nerd scale here. First of all, a year of your first computer.
1982.
That's respectable for an English major. That's very respectable for an English major, yeah. Year of your first cell phone.
1996.
That's not too shabby. It's right in the middle of the pack, I'd say. Operating system on your machines at home?
Mac OS.
Mac guy. Any fancy connection at home? Just a standard Fios cable?
Fios.
Standard. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have a smartphone, a regular phone, feature phone? What kind of phone do you have?
I have an iPhone.
An iPhone. And number of apps?
A lot of apps.
More than 100? More than 10?
70.
70. Gaining momentum here. Do you have a tablet device?
I do. I have an iPad, too.
Whoa, the needle's moving up. You're not really an English major, were you? Social networking sites you participate in, which ones? LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter?
I'm on all of them. I'd say I probably use Twitter more than any of the others.
What's your handle?
JGB.
JGB. Mm-hmm. And the last book you read, I know you have kids, maybe this is a bias, was it electronic or paper?
Electronic.
Electronic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid to say, but you're going to have to go back to your English professors and you're going to disappoint them because you're a card-carrying nerd there, buddy. A card-carrying nerd. There's no doubt about that. What a disappointment to those teachers who wanted you to be unemployed and talk about Shakespeare in a coffee shop all day long. Yeah. Let's get back to something more serious here. Talk about, big project here, sensitive information. Your boss comes up to you and says, okay, buddy, here's your project in a couple of years. You're going to change this website along. I mean, there's some motivation there. It just didn't happen. And we know Obama came in and he wants transparent information. They moved into healthcare. But there's a group called the Markle Foundation that was pushing people to give greater access to personal health records. Let's talk about these Markle folks.
Sure. So this organization and a number of others Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has done some work in this area. Really had expressed an interest in, particularly, again, starting with the Medicare program and the VA, where most of the federal health data resides at this point, in opening up access to that and to making that more available. So I think, as I had said, the redesign of the My Medicare website was a really good partnership internal to our organization with a number of internal organizations and resources, a number of contractors. I think the Blue Button from its inception has been a very good collaboration between the government and a number of nonprofit and or other organizations to sort of make sure that we're building something that people will actually want to use. So it's not like sort of a government committee went off in a back room and came up with this format and sprung it upon the world. I think it's been a really collaborative effort, and that's, I think, helped drive its adoption and has been the reason why a number of the PHR vendors got on board so quickly and said, yeah, we'll support this.
So it was released in what time, last year, this year?
Blue Button was last year.
Last year.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And MyMedicare.gov, when was the site the new site released?
The site was released last year, and I want to say Blue Button actually came on the site, I'll say, 2 months, 3 months after the redesign went live. So they weren't exactly at the same time, but close.
So so here it is, let's say April 1st, and the project gets released. You know, you walk in the office. What happens the first couple of weeks? What kind of response was there? Were there any changes? Oh, they misspelled the blah, blah, blah. Oh, you forgot about this. Hey, we got a 303 to misdirect. I mean, what happened the first week?
So we actually took a two-step approach to launching the website. We launched the improvements to the front end and the login process a little bit before we launched the rest of the site. So that let us get we got a taste of how people were using the new navigation, what they thought of the new look and feel, that sort of thing, and then launched the website. I think there have, you know, we did look at the traffic. We have made some tweaks based on that. We do. It's kind of nice that the site is linked up so closely with 1-800-MEDICARE, because there are times when people will actually call and say, you know, I was trying something on the site and I got confused, or it didn't seem to work for me. So we've got an excellent feedback loop there, probably better than any of our other websites, to say, we heard about an issue. Let's look at that. Let's address that issue.
It has to happen. Just humans, you know.
Yes.
Think you're gonna. Oh, you forgot about, what about out of state? What about, you know, residents living overseas? Well, you never thought about that. Well, how is that addressed? By the way, if you're living overseas and you qualify, you can take advantage of different time zone, get this information. You don't have to worry about an 800 number. I mean, it's just the amount of flexibility here. If you have to think about it, oh, I never thought about that. What about, I never thought about this? Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4. It all kind of fits in with being flexible, allowing people to have more information. We touched on mobile madness and talked about people mobily accessing information. In the next 4 or 5 years, you think there's going to be a change, an emphasis in that? Or where do you see this? Where do you see this heading?
Yeah, I think we see mobile becoming a mobile web use becoming a very dominant channel, and something that might, you know, a couple years out from now represent the majority of the traffic to our websites. And again, you know, as you think about, you know, we said making information available online makes it more accessible to people in real time. Mobile takes that, you know, to an even greater degree. That, yeah, you could be in the doctor's office and say, let me check that. Let me look that up. So that's going to be a very big focus for us moving forward.
Tell me about Direct Project. I heard about this. Is this an open source? I don't know what Direct Project is.
Sure. So the Direct Project is an initiative called the National Health Information Network that is largely driven out of the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT at HHS. And so the Direct Project is basically taking all the technologies behind that health network, and it's been built to very high security standards, and making that information available as an open source platform, so that, again, it can be implemented as an industry standard, and that other systems like that can be as interoperable as possible with it. So that's sort of the background of the Direct Project.
Great. Have to take a break now and close up the interview. It's been great. I'd love to explore this in further. There's so many different avenues to go down: project management, security. I mean, I'd even ask about what kind of data was included in the personal health record versus data from a physician, and what about x-rays? There's hundreds of questions that we can go into in this whole process. But very successful website, mymedicare.gov. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, John Booth, Director of Web and New Media Group at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Continuing congressional coverage is brought to you by United Technologies, Fortune Magazine's most admired aerospace and defense company for 10 of the last 11 years. More at UTC.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick,
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Top story, it appears the Senate will shoot down President Obama's jobs bill in a